Welcome to Ice Time, the Buffalo News' hockey podcast. I'm Lance Isowski, the Sabres beat writer for the Buffalo News, joined by our hockey columnist, of course, Mike Harrington, back from the three-ring circus. Oh, sorry, you were in Montreal, Mike. I forgot about that. At Bell Center, where, yeah, I just love the photo of all of the Montreal media waiting outside the Sabres dressing room after the morning skate on Tuesday. You were there. I'll let you just take a hold of it and set the scene on what you saw that morning after, of course, Terry Pegula's pep talk to the team meeting that was supposed to galvanize and refocus. But boy, did they lay an egg in Montreal, Mike, and now they're at 11 losses in a row. They can call it an 11-game winless streak all they want, but it's 11 losses in a row.
Yeah. You know, I'm still shaking my head over this, Lance. It was a middle-of-December trip to Toronto and Montreal. You know, those are hockey meccas, but it should have been ordinary. But with the Buffalo Sabres, nothing is ordinary. Of course, in Toronto, they blow a pair of two-goal leads. Lindy Ruff falls on his saber after the game, so that becomes a story across North America when I asked him how shocking this whole thing was to hit 10 games. And then they get to Montreal, and of course, they're a talking point across North America in the hotel lounge. I got the French network on the TV, and people are watching, and they're talking about the Buffalo Sabres. You can see Kevin Adams talking, Lindy Ruff talking, some highlights, because they're playing the Habs the next night. So we get to the morning skate, and I kind of knew what was going to happen. You certainly knew what would have happened if you were there. There's, instead of two or three media outside the Sabres dressing room, there's 20 or 30 guys. There's five or six cameras. The Sabres PR officials kind of took a look outside the locker room and went, ooh, it was kind of like the GIF file of the baby running outside, you know, and they see something and they do the quick turnaround and go back down the hall. That famous little meme we see all the time. So they had to refocus themselves, make sure the players knew the mob was coming. And I still can see Jukka Pekka Luukkonen unlacing his goalie skates, just stopping when the door opened. Players did fine. It felt like a different locker room. They felt they were very upbeat Tuesday morning. They talked about Terry Pegula and the message he had. Wasn't getting out. The message was staying in the room, whatever was said. So you're thinking, okay, let's see how the game goes. Let's see if there's any impact, if there's a fresh start. No, you know, Nicholas Aube-Kubel turns the puck over 10 seconds into the game. It goes wide of the net. Owen Power can't handle it because it hits the referee's skate, bounces to Joel Armia, and they're down after 19 seconds. Okay, maybe can the Sabres respond to adversity? No, they crack like a beer bottle in the freezer. What were the shot attempts, Lance, a few minutes into that game?
Is it 21-1?
The shot attempts were 21-1. That's like something you would see, I don't know, in a peewee game.
Worst performance of the season when you consider the opponent and what was at stake, of course.
Right. So they got through that game. They found themselves maybe for 7 minutes in the second period, got down 2-1 on a Cousins goal. UPL gave up a bad goal from behind the net to Slavkovsky, and then the Sabres started taking penalties like they do, gave up a pair of 5-on-3s. Oh, by the way, they forgot that Patrick Laine might want to shoot on the power play from the circle, and they gave up on another hat trick 2 games in a row. They've given up hat tricks to Tavares and Patrick Laine, and it's 6-1 at the end of the second period, and the disaster continues, and here we are, and they just haven't done anything yet, and 11 straight losses is where they're at heading into the weekend, and here we go again. You're playing the Leafs, you're playing Boston, you're playing the Islanders before Christmas, and the chaos continues.
It is very interesting to me that this got out, right? I mean, of course, Terry Pegula, go visit the team. We don't see NHL owners go and address their team. It's very unusual, but it gets to Elliot Friedman at Sportsnet, and I don't think that that's a mistake, right? It's the owner's trying to show that he's involved. He's not an absentee landlord, but it just fed into the hysteria and all the noise. It really did. And you do it in Montreal the day before a game in which you know you're going to have to hold a morning skate, which forces your players to deal with even more noise, which they're not good at dealing with. And to be honest, I get the thought behind it. Part of me is, okay, Terry wants them to know that he cares, if it was even his idea, which I'm skeptical that it was. I think that somebody else told him it might be a good idea. Well, it wasn't. And the whole message of the answer lies within the room. The answer doesn't lie within the room, Mike, no. Does it? And the coach has run out of answers when it comes to getting these guys to play the right way. We see it for a period at a time. We see it for 10-minute segments. Then they go back to turning it over. And
but how about this? How about having the meeting in Montreal? You think if Terry had the meeting in, Columbus or St. Louis, nobody would have cared comparatively. By having it in Montreal, you created a media circus of the highest order. And you're right. One of the problems here is that Lindy Ruff is kind of out of answers 30 games into his return season. And I blame the players for that. Lindy Ruff shouldn't be out of answers, but he's tried different things already, and he can't get guys to respond. And the other thing to me is mental fragility here. I can't believe just how one mistake turns into two, turns into three. They give up goals in bunches. They take penalties in bunches. And I don't know how you get guys out of that, because we've seen it over and over again.
It's a perfect segue to our second topic. Now, before we continue, I just want to mention Jordan Greenaway out long term. After he's having surgery, I would assume, Mike, we're looking at Lindy Ruff said Greenaway's going to be back at some point this season, but I bet we're looking at 2 months, maybe, based on the type of injury that he has. Yep. Ryan McLeod is questionable to play Friday night against the Leafs. Two very important veterans, guys who need to be leaders. And I thought it was interesting, Lindy Ruff said after practice on Thursday that he gathered his most experienced guys, his leadership group, and told them, it's on you. Like, right. You've been here longer. It's not on Yuri Kulik. It's not on Zach Benson. You're the guys who I'm going to put on the ice when the game is on the line. You got to respond the right way. But you're right. To me, it's the reckless turnovers, and they're becoming much more frequent, that these guys are in their heads. You could just see they're pressing. They're not playing in the system. And that just makes your D zone crumble. But yeah, it's fragile, and it's not just the young players. We could sit here and pick on Yuri Kulik and Zach Benson and Jack Quinn and J.J. Paterka, but I'm even seeing it from their top guys, Mike, which is when you're Kevin Adams and you've been backing these guys for months, that he even said at his press conference, I'll go to war with them. I wouldn't want to go to war with them right now. That's how they respond to the first sign of adversity, and that goes to their top players. So I don't think it's a coincidence at all that Lindy Ruff decided, especially going into this game against Toronto, you guys got to be better. And he keeps saying that. He's dropping subtle hints in interviews. He did it on WGR again on Tuesday, where your top guys, they've got to be your drivers. They've got to be your difference makers. And they weren't in that Montreal game for sure.
No, and this team went 11-6-1 after its 0-3 start. That's not a small sample size. There's no reason why they should suddenly crumble. And they have crumbled in the wake of the Colorado loss, which seems to be the defining moment of the season, blowing a 4-0 lead at home. They haven't won a game since. They haven't won a game in the month of December. Colorado was the first one. Dahlin was hurt. They haven't won since. Their top players haven't done much. Alex Tuck gets a lot of opportunities, doesn't finish. Tage Thompson's been relatively invisible at times during this streak. Dahlin obviously has been injured. Even veteran players, though, who aren't necessarily top players. What was Connor Clifton doing in Montreal? Literally forgetting about Patrick Laine over in the circle on the PK unit. So it's not a young player thing at all.
No, it's not. And that's why. And it really reminds me. It's like people have suggested this franchise is cursed. I think back to 2019-20, Mike, when I think it was New Year's Eve. They're playing Tampa Bay. They're up, 3-0 at the end of the second period. The Dalton Smith game. And they just completely fall apart. And it was a different group of players, a different coach, a different general manager. It's like this franchise can't escape these kind of moments, which is what really is so maddening to this fan base, because they thought it was time to believe. They thought it was time to believe in 2023 with a 91-point finish. They thought it was time to believe again when Lindy Ruff comes back. But
you're missing the point. You're missing the point. The you know what the problem is here? We know what the problem is here. The ghost of Connor McDavid is buried at center ice at KeyBank Center. It's never changed since the night they lost that lottery, and here we are 10 years later.
Yeah, and this winless streak, I hate even calling that, even though that's what it technically is, according to the NHL, is that, yeah, I mean, you had some close games, 6-1 goal losses, I get it. But not only did they completely unravel against Colorado, but they unraveled against Detroit in the third period. They unraveled against Toronto. And you're right. Like, how do you fix an entire group's confidence? And I do think some of it is, it reminds me of the COVID season, because in the COVID season, they lost their first 11 games of that losing streak and ended up being 18, of course, happened in a span of 18 days. Now it's 11 games in 20 days. So you have a lot of practice time. These guys get in their heads, and it's really on the coach to try to get them out of it and to get back to playing the right way.
Lindy fixed the starts. Coronado got fired because of bad starts and the power play.
Hasn't fixed the power play, though. And now second periods and third periods are a problem where they're not protecting the lead. It's like they completely forget how to play. Yeah, and finishing, they're missing the net more than almost any other team in the league. They missed the net in practice, so it shouldn't be that big of a surprise that they do it in games. And we'll get to the roster freeze because of the timing of the podcast and what we're recording. But just given the types of mistakes we're seeing from prominent players, Mike, doesn't it have to be the case where you got to get guys? There needs to be change. You can't just keep going with this roster. You can't just call up more kids from Rochester. You need to bring in and move out players who are supposed to be difference makers. And I think at this point, with where they're at, I don't think a teardown is it's not productive. I think you're just setting yourself back. But hockey trades, everything should be on the table except for number 26. Am I right?
Right. You are correct. And before you got here on the scene, the first year of Jason Botterill ended with the Sabres really disappointing everyone and ending last overall. They ended up picking Darlene. What was Jason Botterill's money quote from his end-of-season press conference that year? His money quote was, "This mix is not working." And that's what I hearken back to with this team. I watch this team play right now, and I hear the voice of Jason Botterill saying, "This mix is not working," because it looks like a completely disjointed group. You got some young kids thrown in with some veteran players. You got guys moving up and down the lineup. You have three and a half serviceable defensemen. You have one goalie. I don't think Lindy Ruff wants to put James Reimer in another game after what happened against Detroit. He called up Levi, who was very good in Toronto. I would expect Levi's probably getting called up again to play in Boston on the back-to-back. This mix is not working. They're going to need to make changes sooner rather than later. You know, we don't know. Obviously, by the time people watch this, the Leafs game might be over, and you know, but it'll be before the game. Maybe they win. Who knows? Maybe this thing goes 17, 18 games. Are you going to keep doing nothing? I know we're on a roster freeze, and they're going to be stuck until the 27th when they play Chicago, but this can't go on forever. This is supposed to be a legitimate franchise. Are they serious or not? The Montreal game dropped them into last place in the Eastern Conference. Last place! How much louder do I have to be when you say you're last in the conference in 2024?
It's the second time. Two out of the last three seasons, the head coach has had a decor where he doesn't trust half of it.
No.
It's hard. It's tough to win in this league when you don't trust half of your defensemen. And the Sabres are back.
They score goals sometimes, not enough, whatever. They need one or two veteran defensemen more than they need the fans' top six scorer to replace Jeff Skinner. They could use more offense. They need defensemen more to survive right now.
I would also, counterpoint, I would like a middle six forward. I'm not saying you got to go out and get, because I think Yuri Kulik belongs in Rochester. The turnovers are becoming way too frequent, especially in the neutral zone, and that's just feeding in to where they're at. And they need more experience.
Zach Benson does too, and he's stuck by the rules.
Yes.
They're stuck by the rules.
Well, and that the GM got himself stuck by handling Benson the way that he did. And I like Zach Benson. I like Zach Benson. I think he has the potential to be a really good player in this league for a long time. But he's taking too many penalties. He's committing too many turnovers. He's a 19-year-old who has yet to learn how to score on NHL goalies. It's okay to have one of those guys, maybe, but now you got Yuri Kulik in, who has 4 goals in 22 games with 0 assists. Doesn't have a point on the power play. And you got Jack Quinn fighting it. And you got J.J. Paterka with 1 goal in his last 14 games. And now you got Alex Tuch struggling to score. You got
Ryan McLeod struggling to score.
Ryan McLeod's not scoring, and he was brought in to do that. They just lost Jordan Greenway, which may cause them to rely on yet another young player. Because, Mike, I don't think you can trust Nicholas Aubé-Kubel after that turnover on the first shift of the game in Montreal. I can't. Like, you're at the point. I would have put him on waivers after that. Absolutely. I like him. He's a good player, you know, in a fourth line role. If the whole message around this team going back to last April was accountability, then why aren't we seeing
it? Right.
You know, he commits
the turnover 10 seconds after the owner talks the day before. How does he not go?
I understand you can't sit everybody. You can't play that card every time. You can't do that to your top guys if you think that they give you a chance to win. You're telling me you can't win without Nicholas Abe-Kubel right now? I would rather give that opportunity to somebody in Rochester who's actually worked for it and won't turn that puck over there. It's not that difficult. So, all right. Dahlin looks like he's back on Friday. And, of course, we like to go bigger picture here because we don't know when folks are going to be listening to this. But his return means more to this team than just it gaining its top defenseman. He is a very, and you saw the lack of leadership on the ice in some of these games over the last couple of weeks, right? It was very apparent. Jason Zucker loved the way that he led at times. You saw it in his game.
He just got here.
And he's a third-line player. Right. You know? Your top guys.
There's no way they're on an 11-game winless streak if Dahlin is healthy and playing. They had a 4-1 lead against Colorado in the third period when Dahlin got hurt. He goes out of that game. They couldn't survive it. They lose 5-4. They lose, what is it, seven more since then? So they're 0-8 since Dahlin got hurt. There's no way they're 0-8 because they'd get a couple more power play goals. They'd have more breakouts going nicely out of their zone. They'd get more offensive opportunities. And they wouldn't have blown a 4-1 lead against Colorado, I don't think, if Dahlin plays. So that's been the injury of the season. Dahlin spoke Thursday after practice about swagger. He really stood there and, you know, took the medicine from the media. He did it in Montreal also. If there was ever any doubt, and a lot of people have had some doubt, who should be the captain of this team? I think in the last 2 weeks, we've learned the captain of this team unquestionably is Rasmus Dahlin.
Yep. He shows it every time he's on the ice. He shows it in practices. I know that people are upset that he tried to hit Peyton Krebs. How dare he do such a thing, Mike? Trying to hit a teammate in practice. It never happens.
Maybe how dare Peyton Krebs try to hit the captain of the team?
There you go.
You know?
Yeah, I had no problem with that. But yes.
Me either.
They had Dahlin and Byram before Dahlin's injury were looking like an outstanding top defense pair. And this team has not had that since Matias Samuelsson really started to play inconsistent hockey a year ago or so. And you need a top defense pair in this league. It is very important. Matchups, when it's a tie game or you're down by a goal, you need to be confident in two guys that you could put out there. But Bo Byram's been catching heat from fans, Mike. Even though the guys had to play with Ryan Johnson and Jacob Bryson on the top pair.
Right.
What do you expect? It's not going to look the same.
No. He hasn't been as good without Dahlin. Okay, that's no shock. I mean, no kidding.
They were really good together. And you finally saw this team had a top defense pair. So Dahlin's return gives them that as well. But you mentioned the power play. I think one of the bigger disappointments, not only this season, Mike, but going back to last, is just the lack of progress that we've seen from Owen Power on the power play. Drafted first overall. He's making $8.3 million at this point. He just doesn't do anything on the power play. And we're at the point where he was alternating with Byram at practice on Thursday, which suggests that Lindy Ruff is considering using Byram on the power play instead of Power, which I don't blame him at all.
He should. He should. Yeah. At this point, again, you know, accountability. It's okay if Owen Power just isn't good on the power play. You know, then get him off the unit. Don't have him leading one of those units, especially now if Dahlin's back. I would prefer to see the quarterbacks in the power play be Dahlin and Byram, because right now Owen Power is in his own head. He's too slow to make decisions with the puck. He doesn't really know where to put the puck. He doesn't know what he's doing out there. You know, it's as if, you know, did he do it? You know, I didn't watch a lot of college hockey. Did he run the power play much at Michigan?
Yeah, but it was a super team, right?
Right. I mean, he had Veneers out there and all these other guys.
You don't have to do much. Yeah, you don't have to create deception with the way that you handle the puck at the blue line. You don't get pressure like you do in the NHL, and he hasn't handled it well at all. And that's been – he's not putting up points. There's a lot to like there with Owen Power, but paying him as soon as they did, that's the risk that you run. The first couple years of that deal, you're not getting equal value. And Dahlin back, he's a one-man breakout, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if Libby Ruff tries to play him 30 minutes against Toronto, because
he has to.
Also, you gotta try to end this winless streak, and he's the guy who can help you do it. Roster freeze, Mike. It's been interesting to see around the league. Kaapo Kakko gets moved from the Rangers to the Seattle Kraken for Will Borgen and draft picks. There's a lot of noise. We just don't see that many moves this time of year. They happen, of course, but it just, there's more noise. There's more teams like the Sabres who don't like their mix, and it's just going to be very fascinating. Or not just in the next 24 hours, of course, but you know, Jason Carmanos went and saw the Detroit and Philly on Wednesday night. Their scouts are out watching other players. As much as I know the owner said the answer lies within, they are looking around trying to
see. Well, what's up, by the way? What's up with all the bloggers in Nashville?
Yeah, it's weird, huh?
What a circus going on there. Are they getting fed stuff by their front office? The Predator, we're sniffing around. The Predators are sniffing around Dylan Cousins. Well, that may be fine and well, but it just seems like there's a bunch of bloggers in Nashville running their mouths off about what players the Predators want. Well, you can want whoever you want.
Wishful thinking, I guess.
Yeah, if you can't make a deal, it doesn't matter. But all this quote-unquote reporting, and I put it in quotes intentionally, about Dylan Cousins and the Predators, let's see what happens. But that's kind of some bizarre stuff, and that's unfortunate what these guys have to deal with, seeing their name in the social media era where any Tom, Dick, or Harry can write what they want. It's one thing if Elliot Friedman says, it's another thing for these people in Nashville no one's ever even heard of to be reporting this kind of stuff. But the freeze will end all that, and then we'll have to deal with the trade deadline. It does seem inconceivable the Sabres do nothing here. And like you say, Carmanos has been out. I just think, you know, I would have been much more wholesale moves. The Montreal game seemed to be a tipping point to me. And a real disaster organizationally that called for a big response, and to do nothing seems crazy. You know, get a couple moves in here. You know, and by moves, I don't even mean trades. To me, after the Montreal game, I make three or four moves. But by that, I mean one thing I do is I put Abe Kubel on waivers for sure. Maybe someone else goes on waivers. Maybe someone gets called up from Rochester. Maybe I make one trade. I can't imagine the only differences in the lineup against Toronto are Dahlin and Lafferty coming off injuries. I want three or four guys who weren't in the dressing room in Montreal to play in the game against Toronto and the game against Boston. And I don't think that's going to happen. But to me, that's what I would have been doing. And I just think Adams has been told by the owner not to worry about things. And I don't think Adams is in any way, shape, or form acting like a GM struggling to keep his job. How can he be struggling to keep his job if he literally does nothing when this team has dropped from third in the Atlantic Division to 16th in the Eastern Conference in 3 weeks?
We've seen GMs under pressure. Chris Drury comes to mind, where he did a couple of very bold things. A few backfired on him, made a couple of big trades. His dressing room is very angry at him at the moment, but he did something, of course.
Kaapo Kakko complained that they sat a young player. But the trade had nothing to do with Kaapo Kakko complaining, even though it happened the next day.
Yeah, they did. They tried to do damage control on that one immediately. Kevin Weeks tweets out 5 seconds later, no, the team told me it wasn't. Yeah, okay. I do think it's really interesting, Mike, how often we're hearing Dylan Cousins' name. It does, and for as much grief as that guy catches from the fan base, and some of it is earned. He has not played like a $7 million player since signing that contract. He's not scoring. The inconsistency in his game is problematic, of course, but he catches a lot of heat, and this is still a guy who is wanted around the league.
People see the body, physical, size, first-round pick. They see him as a number two center. And the thing you have to remember, when people, the buzzards are circling the Buffalo Sabres. Why? Because when you look at the Buffalo Sabres and you're one of the other teams, you're like, we want him. We're going to fix that guy because they
screwed him up. Get him out of Buffalo. Yeah.
Get him out of Buffalo. He'll be fine. They screwed him up. So let's get that guy. We'll give Buffalo whatever they want. We want him. That's why people want Dylan Cousins. If you're looking at the Buffalo Sabres right now, your two targets of guys you think you realistically could get are Dylan Cousins and Bo Byron.
Maybe Alex Tuck. Yeah, just because of the contract.
Yeah, the contract. Byron's RFA coming up. Cousins is signed, of course, but, you know, they think, well, Buffalo needs to change its mix. So I'm not thinking that one of them might not go at some point. It's entirely possible. The Sabres do need to change the mix, and I'm not talking third and fourth line guys. Somebody in this core has to go.
I trade and J.J. Probably, Paterka.
Right, or J.J. Paterka, probably
that's,
soon.
That's like, because I wouldn't want to pay him. I'm sorry. I like him, but you picked him with the second round. You got him in the second round. It's not like you invested a lot in him. And the turnovers, the bad defense, no impact on the power play. I'm not paying him $7 million. And he's young enough to where the trade value would be there. Where I don't want to get, I don't, if I'm the GM, I wouldn't want my team to get younger if I'm in the NHL, especially with the Sabres and all the prospects they have. I would try to get more experience and get more playoff skill sets into my lineup. Alex Tuch, Dylan Cousins, Bo Byram, playoff skill sets, in my opinion, especially once if Cousins unlocks the offense again, which I think he's more than capable of doing in the right environment. But Paterka, I've got serious questions.
Right. About. When Kyle Okpozo was here, and then when he left to go to Florida, what did he say? He said that people in Buffalo get labeled as bad players because they're never in the playoffs. But some people in that dressing room could be dogs in the playoffs. And we saw what Casey Mittelstadt did in Colorado. And I think Rasmus Dahlin would thrive in the playoffs. And the other guy who would thrive, I think, in the playoffs is Dylan Cousins. I think he's got that burr in his game where he could be a dog in the playoffs on the right team. So I think a lot of teams out there see that and say, let's just get him out of Buffalo and we will really have another playoff dog. And when Okpozo said that, I'm kind of like, none of these guys have been in the playoffs or whatever. You know, Jeff Skinner's never been in the playoffs. And then Mittelstadt went to Colorado, and Nathan MacKinnon told me at the NHL Awards he might have been our best player in the playoffs this year. So that line from Okpozo resonated. And you think now it would fit Dylan Cousins tremendously. And there's teams out there, I'm sure, that are thinking the same thing.
And that's what I keep in mind when you try to, when you write analysis of the play, some of these players, and you really have to consider the other factors, how their development has been impacted, because we've seen it before. Like with Ryan, we can keep going down the list. Brandon Montour is another one who got badly misused here. He goes on and he's still playing well in Seattle. He won a Stanley and a very important player in the Panthers Stanley Cup win. So we say it, I think, every week, Mike, never a dull moment, of course. And it's just going to keep getting more interesting. They lost another important player out of their lineup in Greenway. How do they fill that role? What is the general manager going to do? Is the owner going to give another pep talk, or did he learn his lesson that that's not the best idea? We're going to find out.
Is the GM going to give another press conference? We found out that wasn't the best idea.
He's Mike Carrington. I'm Lance Lysowski. We are obviously going to have you covered every step of the way in Buffalo and on the road. Thank you all for listening, and we will catch you all next time. Have a great weekend.